Hello everybody, welcome back to the Snack Dose podcast. We're doing another Turbo Dose today and continuing our Approach 2 series. We're doing the Approach to Chest Pain. So what we're going to cover is an overview of our approach, and then we'll look at some of the sort of serious causes and then some of the more common causes.
Chest pain is one of those conditions in and of itself where when you see it on the triage note is indeed potentially chest pain invoking in the practitioner. And the reason I say that is that there's a broad range of differentials, and these differentials do include life-threatening pathologies that we need to be aware of, but there are also some really, really common, less life-threatening and benign presentations, and it's really difficult sometimes to weed out those in and amongst the life-threatening.
I like the phrase less life-threatening as a general sort of term. Yeah. I think I quite like to describe pathology as life-threatening, less life-threatening, benign, I think.
Thanks, Matt. I'm here all week. In an acutely unwell patient, of course, we want to adopt an ABCD approach. Mm-hmm. We want to get an urgent 12 lead, and we really want to be comparing that to an old ECG, if possible. We want to do a focused history and examination, just like with anybody else who has got pain. We're going to be using either Socrates or OPQRST to differentiate out that pain and get a bit more information. So we want to look at the onset of the pain. So is this a sudden onset of chest pain, which would make us think a little bit more about sort of PE or a thoracic aortic aneurysm, or in some instances a myocardial infarction? Or is there something that is of more gradual onset, which could be more related to reflux, musculoskeletal conditions, sometimes myocardial infarctions, which can build in nature? Of course, remembering that things like myocarditis, epicarditis, and those sort of conditions can also come on in gradual onset. In terms of provoking and alleviating factors, if it's painful to palpate, we can think a little bit more about musculoskeletal pain or fracture. If it's painful on movement, again, we can think about musculoskeletal type diseases or pleuritic pain, particularly if it's more painful on inspiration. And some particular postures can give us a provoking of chest pain. So, for example, the classic leaning forward, relieving pericarditis type pain. An individual who has chest pain that is provoked by exercise in an anginal picture may be alleviated by, of course, not exercising. Yet another reason why we should avoid exercising. We need to know if that pain radiates anywhere. Radiation of pain is really significant, particularly if it's that cardiac origin or cardiac trajectory, so up into the back, up into the jaw or neck. We want to be thinking about that upper epigastric type pain as well, don't we, Matt, in terms of sort of inferior MI. The severity of the pain is, of course, really, really important. Somebody who is 10 out of 10 chest pain, we're going to be a lot more worried about, as opposed to a kind of chronic 2 out of 10. And the timing is also incredibly important. So we want to know what the individual was doing at the time of this onset in chest pain. Now, a really worrying picture, as an example, would be an individual who has relatively stable angina, and they get an exacerbation of that angina when they walk up a steep flight of stairs. But recently, they had an onset of chest pain at rest. Mm. Alternatively, if an individual has had a lower respiratory tract infection for some time, has been coughing, and then got a sharp episode of chest pain after a cough, then that timing will allow us to funnel down a pathway of thinking this is more of a musculoskeletal disease. Investigations for chest pain, how do we go down this?
It depends on what you're looking for, but I think the approach should include, obviously, an ECG. Again, blood tests. Just consider things like a troponin if you're thinking it's potentially acute coronary syndrome. Consider a D-dimer if you're thinking it's potentially a PE. Obviously, these are quite common in hospital, despite our best VTE prophylaxis. And a chest X-ray is often quite helpful, because there's lots of causes that you might not pick up clinically. We always teach students to try and pick up pneumothoraces clinically, decreased air entry, hyperresonance, etc. The reality is that most pneumothoraces you won't be able to pick up clinically, so getting a chest X-ray just to exclude that in somebody who's got pleuritic chest pain is always helpful.
Thinking about those sinister causes that we don't want to be missing, the most important thing that comes to everyone's mind with chest pain is acute coronary syndrome, heart attack, myocardial infarction, whatever you'd like to call it. Typically, this pain is associated or is described as a retrosternal pressure or tightness, which may radiate to the neck, may radiate to the shoulders, and can go down either the left arm or, more rarely, the right arm. It may be exertional, particularly in those with pre-existing angina, and it's associated with that diaphoresis picture, so the sweating plus or minus that nausea. And quite frequently, in my experience, I've seen quite significant colour changes in these individuals. They kind of got that MI type colour.
Ashen.
Look a bit ashen, look a bit peaky. If they're truly having a cracking, usually anterior MI. Matt, what do you think about in terms of sinister causes otherwise?
I think almost alongside it, I think for me, it's probably aortic dissection.
Yeah.
So it's one of those that sort of... frequently missed from our perspective, and I think it's because the classic presentation doesn't always happen, certainly in the elderly and lots of other patient groups. But typically, you generally get a sudden onset pain that's described as a tearing, radiates to maybe the neck, the abdomen, the back, sort of interscapular type pain, and it's normally sort of the worst pain of your life, and certainly in an acute dissection. No amount of morphine seems to resolve the pain. They're still uncomfortable. And with an aortic dissection, certainly if they go up into the neck, they can develop neurological features as well, as you get sort of stroke type picture there. Chest pain with neurology, you have to think dissection. As I mentioned, it can present atypically in the elderly. It can present atypically in diabetics as well. When you're seeing these patients, there's lots of tests that we often do. So you often do a chest X-ray and a D-dimer in an attempt to sort of vainly rule them out. The only way you can actually rule out an aortic dissection is by a CT angiogram. So a normal chest X-ray, you're looking for a widened mediastinum. The mediastinum may well be normal in an aortic dissection. And equally, you might have a normal D-dimer in an aortic dissection. So if your clinical index of suspicion is high, don't fart about with those things. Just get a CT angio. Back to you, Joe, for sinister causes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the next one probably is PE. And PE is sort of the bane of the practitioner, I think, really, and particularly from a primary care perspective, because it can affect the young, it can affect the elderly. It's very nuanced in terms of its presentation quite frequently. It's easily missed. It is a mimic of so many other things. It's very difficult to differentiate out from a musculoskeletal chest pain, for example. And some people might have small PEs and not really show any significant signs of desaturation or shortness of breath significantly, like we would expect them to. Typically, PEs give an onset of pleuritic chest pain, and it's associated with shortness of breath plus or minus hemoptysis, although in my experience, I don't often see a lot of people who have got that classic kind of I'm coughing up blood and shortness of breath picture.
No.
It's quite often chest pain and shortness of breath that are the two kind of cardinal features.
Yeah.
Alongside those symptoms, the signs may actually be that these patients are hypoxic and or hypotensive, usually in those larger PEs. There are multiple scores that you can use for pulmonary embolism. Well score, PERC score, plus or minus D-dimer. And a CTPA, which is a very, very commonly undertaken investigation. So that's PEs, Matt. Next one.
Pneumothorax. Either medical or traumatic. So if they're traumatic, there's obviously going to be a quite obvious precursor. I was hit by a car, I was stabbed by a knife, etc. But the medical ones are often a little bit more subtle. So they generally tend to be a sudden onset pleuritic type chest pain with shortness of breath. Again, they might be hypoxic. They shouldn't be hypotensive, though. That's often a helpful distinguisher from other causes, unless they're becoming a tension pneumothorax. That's when you need to get worried. Risk factors, obviously, are going to be your tall, sort of marfanoid, thin patients. Those are at risk of spontaneous pneumothoraces. The other big patient group is those with bullous disease. So COPD is the big sort of patient group there. Obviously, we're going to get some imaging. It's either going to be a CT if we're in a trauma setting, or it's going to be a chest X-ray if we're not. And then we're going to use the BTS guidelines on chest drain insertion to guide our ongoing management.
So in terms of more common causes then, something to bear in mind always, particularly in the context of a recent infection, is pericarditis. Pericarditis often presents with a retrosternal chest pain, similar to that of acute coronary syndrome, but there may also be some pleuritic findings alongside that. It's alleviated by leaning forward, and on the ECG, there is quite commonly widespread ST saddling, this elevation with a saddling appearance. And we say widespread because it is spread throughout the anatomical territories in a way that doesn't particularly make sense. So, for example, anterior and inferior, which would mean technically if it's an ACS that you'd be blocking your right coronary artery and left coronary artery at the same time, which is...
It's a bad day for that person.
it's good going and or possibly a physical impossibility. Other ECG findings are small QRS complexes, and there is quite commonly a PR depression that is one of the most sensitive and specific findings. Matt, what other common causes do you look for that probably make up some of the most common actual discharges for chest pain, don't they?
Bit of a diagnosis of exclusion, but reflux or GORD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, gives you sort of a retrosternal burning type pain, often radiates to the mouth, radiates to the neck. can give you a bit of a metallic taste as well. Clinically, there might be some epigastric tenderness, but you shouldn't have any evidence of a surgical abdomen. So they shouldn't have rebound tenderness or involuntary guarding. There's often a precursor as well. So they might have been started on some NSAIDs recently or possibly some steroids or something like that that's caused a bit of esophageal irritation. And the key here is getting them comfortable often with over-the-counter remedies, antacids and things, and considering things like PPIs.
Yeah, absolutely. So pneumonia would be the next one for me. So a predominantly bacterial lower respiratory tract infection can give you chest pain. However, it's rarely the cardinal feature of the pneumonia. And often what you will find is that these patients can come in with a musculoskeletal type chest pain as opposed to a specifically pleuritic sort of chest pain. And they will have those classic lower respiratory tract infection type symptoms. And I suppose that leads back onto the last one, which is musculoskeletal pain. This is often a sharp pleuritic chest pain. It's usually positional, worse on movement, and it is often reproducible. But I would like to add a caveat that a lot of these findings in order to differentiate MSK from more sinister causes aren't very specific. They aren't very sensitive, and you need to take them into account with alongside all of the other diagnostic interventions and your assessments.
So that's just a quick run through of our approach to chest pain. Hopefully it was helpful for you. A few key take-home messages. Just remember that when you're seeing patients with chest pain, there's an extensive and very broad differential, including potentially life-threatening causes of chest pain, some that are less life-threatening and some that are benign. It's important to adopt an ABCD approach for those who are acutely unwell, taking a focus history and examination, and completing some routine investigations such as a 12-lead ECG, some blood tests, considering a troponin, considering a D-dimer, and a chest x-ray. We then went on to discuss some of the key sinister causes, those broadly being ischemic heart disease or acute coronary syndromes, aortic dissections, pulmonary embolisms, and pneumothoraces. Then we finished by covering some of the common causes such as pericarditis, gastroesophageal reflux disease, pneumonia, musculoskeletal chest pain.